Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
.755 is real with David O'Brien and Erica Flaherty is on the air now.
Hey guys, welcome back into the latest edition of 755 is real. Today is a live room recording podcast. We had one last week on Tuesday. I encourage you to check it out. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the live room, it is in the Athletic app. You're able to interact with David and Eric in real time, ask them your questions. We had a great experience in a great room today. Questions range from Eddie Rosario's injury to where Acuña will be defensively once he returns. Also, what's up with the baseballs, as well as Chris Bassett's comments. So the questions ran the gamut today. Make sure you guys subscribe to 755 is Real, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. In addition, make sure you are subscribed to The Athletic, $1 a month for 6 months deal going on right now. TheAthletic.com/755isReal. Again, we appreciate your guys' support. Make sure to check us out on YouTube as well. I'll have the URL in the show description for that if you want to check us out. And once again, as always, you guys are great. Thank you for tuning in. Here's David and Eric on today's live room.
Chase, how you doing?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good.
Good. First of all, thank you guys for doing this. It gives me something to do on my way to work every single week. So quick question. Obviously, I was going to ask a question about the pitching staff, but with the updates about Rosario and his surgery. What do we think is going to happen from the outside perspective? Obviously, Demerit looked good last night, but is that something that you think AA decides to kind of look elsewhere, just because with Acuña coming back, we have options, but obviously that's going to be kind of a platoon job. So just kind of getting you guys perspective on that.
Well, you got to at least try Demerit, and what you've got now, you can't just not give. I mean, honestly, look at what's available. Here we are in the third week of April. If there's a good outfielder, what team is so far out of it that they're going to trade a good outfielder in the third week of April? Honestly, I mean, you just don't see trades made for good players in April. And the other thing is, are you going to get a player who's better than Demerit? I mean, we don't know what Demerit can do. What we've seen so far, very small sample, but it's been very impressive. I don't think we can condemn the guy to what he's done in the past, and not because I don't know how many times we've seen guys make big jumps in performance, whether that's in their second year or in the case of Kyle Wright in his fifth major league year. And in the case of Demerit, this is his third year in the major leagues and the first time he's really going to get a chance to play other than when he was in Detroit before he got hurt. So, and he says he's made a lot of changes in his preparation, that he's far better ready, far more ready to play now. So I think you got to give him a shot. And also, if you bring in somebody else, there's not going to be much playing time at all for the three outfielders that you have, because Acuña's playing every day after we get past his first week or two where he might DH a couple of times. After that, he's playing every day in right field, and Duvall's playing every day in center. So you've got one job, left field, and everybody that's left out there is either going to play either there, well, not going to DH because that's going to be Ozuna.
Yeah, and I guess that was my follow-up question was, if you think that they are confident enough to have Ozuna out there at all, or if he's strictly going to be DH and then that left field role is just going to be kind of a revolving door of whether it's Arcia or whoever they feel, you know, needs some downtime or anything like that.
Yeah, I think left field are going to go with what they've got now and see what they've got before they make any kind of decisions on whether they need to pursue somebody else, because like I said, it's not the time to go out and get anybody anyway. So if he has to go get somebody, he can do that. But the way Demerit's played so far, you'd be kind of stupid just to sit him down now, to send him back to AAA or put him on the bench. I mean, and not even giving him a chance. So I think he's going to get a shot to play every day or most of the time in left field, because you've also got Dickerson, who I know has produced no numbers, but he has hit the ball hard. I know people don't like hearing that, but if you're watching the games, he has hit the ball hard for the most part. And Ozuna is the plan all along was to have Ozuna DH before Acuna got hurt, once Acuna got back. And that was assuming Rosario was going to play well. And now I think we have a good idea of why Rosario did not play well. So this changes things, obviously, because Rosario was going to play left field once Acuna got back, and Ozuna was going to DH every day. So now if you have to play Ozuna out there in left field, you can. I mean, he's not going to help you, and he's not going to kill you most of the time. He just can't throw. But if you have to, you can play him there. But still, you need a DH, and he's going to be the DH most of the time. I think right now we're going to see Demerit play out there, see what he can do playing every day, playing on a regular basis.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
You got it.
I like the catch he made last night.
Man, that was a difficult catch because he went around that little thing that sticks out, that juts out, that kind of cranny there.
Yep.
And for a guy who hasn't played out there but a couple of games, that was pretty impressive, man. Guys that play out there all the time don't make that catch.
Yeah. I mean, just me looking at it as a pitcher, a guy that can cover that much ground and make those plays, I want him to get a shot. And, you know, like you said, there's no trades to make right now. So their best option is to see what he can do. And for him, you know, these are the things that happen that give you the opportunity to make a name for yourself and stay in the big league. So he's got to seize this.
And he's only 27.
Yep.
I know he's been around a long time. It feels like he's a lot older now. He's 27.
Yep.
I mean, so far there's been nothing to watching him hit and play the outfield, which he hasn't done a lot. I mean, he came up as an infielder, and he moved to the outfield right before he got traded to Detroit. But he's an athlete, man. He's very athletic, and he's an instinctive type player.
Yep. Adam Jones started off as an infielder.
Yeah. I mean, he showed me something with that opposite field home run.
Yeah.
On that pitch away, he hit a ball where it was pitched, as they say, and that was impressive. That was a good pitch, man.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think you got to give the guy a chance, or you're not doing yourself any favor, or him, obviously. You're not doing right by him, but forget that. You're not doing yourself any favors if you've got this resource and you don't at least see what you've got. So,
yep, you got to get those answers.
Yeah, yeah. Eric D., what do you got, man?
Evan D.
Eric D. Oh, I'm sorry. Evan D.'s on the stage right now. Evan D., what do you got, man?
Hey, thanks for doing this space each week. It's been really enjoyable. I'm just I'm wondering how you think the lineup's gonna look once Acuna does come back. I know he's gonna slot right into the one spot. Do you think everybody just slides down, like Acuna in the two spot, Olsen in the three spot, or do you think Ozzie slides more into the mix near the like the five or six spot to help him get some RBI opportunities with this recent power surge he's had?
It's gonna be interesting. I really don't get a good feel other than Acuna is going to be hitting leadoff from day one when he returns. And I think he'll keep Olsen in that two spot because I think he fits well there and he fit well there. So then after that, it becomes, I don't think you can really go wrong. I don't think there's an obvious choice for 3, 4, 5. Obviously Riley needs to hit. Obviously Riley hits in one of those spots. Duvall has not hit well this year. You know, he drove in some runs the other day and got a big hit, but he has not hit well, so he can be down and slotted down a little further. I think Ozzie's probably got to go in there somewhere. I don't have an answer for you because there's not really a good sense of what they're going to do with it. Just based on what we've seen so far, other than the 1-2. And I know he wants to give Ozzie some opportunities to drive in runs because he does have the 6 home runs. All of them from the leadoff spot. But I don't think there's a real if Duvall was hitting like he did last year, I would say he'd be a good in that cleanup spot. But he's not hitting like that right now. So it's going to be interesting. Dansby obviously stays in the bottom of the order.
Yeah.
But
I think overall, a great problem to have, I guess.
I like Olsen behind Acuna. I like making them make that choice.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're going to keep seeing that. And for that logic too, I like Riley in the three spot the way it used to be with those first three guys. That's who the pitcher has to face in the first inning, and those are the guys that are going to get the most at bats. I mean, if you go on that theory, which is a pretty sound theory, I'd have Riley in the three hole.
Yeah, me too.
He's hitting around 300 with a high OBP and a ton of power. So, I mean, why not sit him in that? What was the conventional spot where you had your best power hitter, you know, for a long time with Chipper Jones there forever. And Freddie was there forever until he moved to the two hole in the last couple of years. So right now I would guess he goes, I know he's going to go Acuna, and I think he'll go Olsen and then Riley in the three spot, I would think. And until Duvall starts hitting, maybe you go Ozzie in the four spot, or you go Ozuna in the four spot. Ozuna's been hitting pretty well and hitting the ball hard. So maybe you go Ozuna in the four spot and then Ozzie five.
Yeah, I like it.
All right.
We got Dalton S.
Dalton S.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering what y'all think the rotation will look like next week, man? For the Mets series.
However it lines up, I haven't looked that far ahead.
Well, yeah, they're not gonna. Snead is not one to shift the rotation around in order to get the best three or four guys against the top teams. He doesn't do that. So
I think it's early to do that too.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he wants everybody to keep getting their extra rest, and they're gonna need an extra starter for that doubleheader. So.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I think you'll probably end up going with an opener for that because they got the extra arm right now with Woods brought up yesterday, and you've got another opener. You got obviously a really good opener option in Chavez, who's done it well last year. So you could see him start one of those games, but otherwise it's just going to go the way it's lined up right now. If you just advance those guys forward from where they are right now. I'd have to give the notes out and look, but they play, five games between now and then. So,
yeah, I think it's just too early to start. Obviously they're looking like the team that's going to be your number one competition in the division, but this early in the season, you don't start tweaking your rotation and moving guys up and doing that type of stuff yet, especially with a short spring training.
Okay, thank you guys.
Yep, Jeremy P.
Jeremy P.
Hey guys. Just wanted to ask about this little controversy with the baseball. Dave, have any of the Braves players had any strong opinions one way or the other? I would assume it creates a divided locker room where the hitters are complaining and the pitchers are loving life.
Well, Bassett complained. A pitcher complained last night.
Oh, really? Yeah, I really haven't heard any hitters complain, even though obviously in that first week and a half, 2 weeks, a lot of balls were dying at the track. You have not seen that as much in the last week. So, I mean, are they already making changes? Or does it matter ballpark to ballpark? Because, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out because it's too early right now. What we're seeing, I think, is that it's with all the ballparks now having humidors, you're seeing places where it normally would be really dry. Their balls are going to be a little more moist than they would have been, and the places where it's humid, it's going to be a little more dry. So you're going to see the ball carry in places like San Francisco where it didn't carry before, or places like Atlanta. The ball's going to be a little drier than it would be in the middle of summer. Now, early in the season doesn't really matter because the weather's not been normal here yet. It's been really nice and pretty dry. But the thing I had pitchers tell me in the first week when all those balls were dying at the track, because there were a ton of them, was that the seams are higher. And I had three different pitchers tell me the seams are higher. And the theory being on those high drives, they get the having higher seams, it slows the spin of the ball as it's reaching its apex up there. And that's why you're seeing these long balls that you're so used to landing in the fifth or 10th row are instead being caught at the warning track. And by that same token, balls that are hit as line drives that kind of have backspin are not getting caught with that drag, the same drag that's created by having higher seams. And those balls were carrying into the seats. Again, it's too early to really pinpoint exactly what's going on, but that's what the pitchers told me, that the seams were higher and also that the balls were a little slicker, chalkier. which could have a lot to do with the humidors being in every ballpark.
Yeah, I think the big thing for me about it, and I think most players would agree, is you just want consistency. You know, I mean, over the past 3, 4, 5 years, you've had so many hitters adjust to lifting the ball in the air. And why wouldn't you when it's traveling an extra 30, 40 feet? But you don't see it in the NBA. They don't make the hoop smaller. They don't make the hoop higher, lower. You know, NFL, they don't change the distance of the field, the width of the field. I think tweaking the ball and changing the ball and making all these different adjustments every year, it's hard for the players to know what their approach should be. And same with pitchers. You know, are you getting more break on your pitches, things like that? I think overall they just need to stop playing with it and come up with a consistent ball so hitters can adjust their approach. And if the ball's not going to fly, I think that's fine. But you got to let the players know what's happening, because that's why you're seeing so many warning track fly balls now. Is guys are still in that lift mode where they're rewarded for hitting fly balls, and now they're dying at the track. And that's why offense has been so far down this season.
Yeah, and I think it really doesn't help the trust issue with the players, the fact that the MLB now owns the company making the balls, you know?
Yeah, I mean, is it going to change really next week? Yeah.
Yeah, that's really unusual, too. You don't have that in the NFL or the NBA where the league owns the equipment manufacturer making the balls. So nobody right. believes it when the commissioner comes out and said the balls are the same, because they're in control of the balls. So they're going to do what they think they need to do to either add offense or subtract offense. And in this case, I think they probably went too far with changing the seams of the balls, making them a little bigger. But, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, they can make adjustments on the fly. So if things are out of control, I think you see it go the other way and pretty quickly, because all they have to do is have the company make a – just slightly tweak the balls and return them to what they were. So
they just got to stop playing with it.
But again, I've seen a little difference though. In the past week, I have seen more balls carrying into the seats than we did there for about a week or 10 days. You saw none getting it. That road trip, Pena had 2 home runs that are home runs any other time of the year and almost any Agreed. Year, you know? And then, I counted like 7 balls in that Padres series that were caught at the track. And then there were a couple last night too. There were also a couple that got into the seats that would not have gone out in that first week. So we'll see, but I think the balls are definitely a little different.
I don't trust that they won't change if offense stays this low.
Yeah. Cause they want offense.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
And now, 2 pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Jeff B.
Hey guys, what can you tell us about Eddie Rosario's injury? Did he injure his eye? Was it an infection? Did something get in it? And how long had he been dealing with it?
Well, I wish I could tell you more, but we can't because we didn't talk to Eddie. He was not available. The manager and the general manager said only that he went to the doctor. He was diagnosed with, because I asked, is there a specific thing that we can call this? Is it a corneal abrasion? Is it a, you know, what? And what they were told is that he has blurred vision and swelling in the eye. And that is it as far as what the team said they were told. Yeah. When he did it, I asked the manager, did he do it? Could he have done it at spring training? Could he have done it? Has it been bothering him all season? And Snit said that Eddie has not complained about it. He said a couple of times it's kind of been like, nothing major, but he's indicated that he felt like something was in his eye, but that he was fine. He was playing and he could play. And he said, they asked him, "Are you okay?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm fine." And he, every time they asked, even when he went to send him in the pinch hit the other day, he said he was fine. After the Sunday game, it got worse apparently. And that's when he went and they said, "Well, you need to see the doctor about that." And he went to the team doctor and he said, yeah, he set him up with the appointment with the retinal specialist. But until that point, he had not indicated to anyone that it was bad enough that he thought he needed to see a doctor. Because, guys deal with stuff getting in their eyes and that kind of thing. So they didn't know it was any worse than that. And I saw Eddie many times, and I saw no swelling in his eye or no redness, which you see if a guy's got a real bad – you notice the redness. You know, I didn't notice anything about him in the days leading up to that. I did not see him Saturday or Sunday when it happened. But I wish I could tell you more, but we have not been given anything. He's having a laser procedure today, and the expected rehab time for it is 8 to 12 weeks, and that's all we know.
Okay. Yeah, I think he might not even know how long that's been happening to him or what's been going on, because it's just such a fine thing seeing a baseball that if you're operating at 80%, and you think, you look at the ball, I think I feel fine. And then his eyes aren't lining up with, his swings and he's missing the ball. He might just think, maybe I'm just a little off and be trying to fix his swing. And then, it kind of piles up and he thinks he should be hitting these balls and he's just missing them. It's just one of those things that he might not even know how long it's been going on or what's going on with it. And then you go see a doctor and they're like, shit, man, your eye's really bad. And that's when you'd be talked into getting it fixed.
Especially if it was a gradual thing, like you said,
right.
He might not have noticed if it was a gradual thing worsening. Hopefully, for his case, it's not a degenerative type thing, because then you are, and that's a mess. But, he could have done it. The eyes are so sensitive that he could have done it. You watch what these guys do, the sliding, when you have a collision at second base, when you get raked across the face with a glove or, anything could have, he could have got something in it and then rubbed it, some dirt, and then rubbed it wrong. Anything could have caused it, and maybe it just worsened. But, I mean, you think about it. It's his right eye. He's a left-handed hitter.
Yeah, it's important.
I'm shocked that he didn't strike out half the time. I mean, that he doesn't have the same strikeout rate a couple other guys on the team did. Pretty impressive that he was even able to put the ball in play. I mean, you can't if you can't see out of your right eye, you had no idea of the spin, because it's – I mean, guys that even have 20/30 vision have trouble kept picking up the spin on the ball. You got to have great vision to be able to see what the pitch is, much less, precisely where it's located. And it kind of explains a lot. And then he missed, he had two errors in the one game in San Diego. He just completely missed one fly ball. So that would really, we kind of were like, what's going on with this guy? I mean, because he's never been a gold glover, but he made the plays. He was able to make up for some bad routes with athleticism, but he always made the plays about. So that was kind of strange. Anyway, that's all we know so far. I'm sure when Eddie gets back after he has the procedure, maybe he comes back in a few days and he's in the clubhouse, I'm interested to ask him if he knows when it happened or if it was a gradual thing.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
Matt Orr.
What's up, fellas?
What's going on, Matt?
Just wondering, Eric, you were talking about Bryce Elder getting in his head after giving up those homers. And, you guys are talking about Kyle Wright's mental adjustments. How much of that is kind of the sports psychologist role of a pitching coach? What makes a good pitching coach? And what would you tell Bryce Elder or Strider right now so that they're not just going, shit, does the league have the book on me? Am I done? That old thing.
Well, I mean, that's the whole job. I mean, you're always having those battles in your head. And, like what I was saying with Elder wasn't necessarily that he is in his head, just that those things can kind of pop up and losing confidence can really cost you. And I think that's what's turned around with Kyle Wright, is he's confident. And, when your mechanics are a little off, you can be as confident as you want. And you're still going to get raked if you're throwing the ball down the middle and you don't have that same life on it or direction or extension. I don't think it's necessarily any one specific person's job. I mean, it can be a teammate that picks you up and says something really positive to you. But I think that's just something that overall clubhouse dynamics can help guys a lot with, feeling comfortable and having good people to talk to. And it's definitely something that, people think a pitching coach's job is just, mechanics or you know, critiquing what pitches you should throw or a plan, but it's also, you know, your pitching coach is kind of your number one mental skills coach. So, that's just something that you have to learn and go through yourself and learn how to handle that doubt. And hopefully there's good people around you to help you, but I don't think it's one specific guy's role.
And if you read that story I wrote on Kyle, he really gives a lot of credit to Zach Sorensen, their mental performance coach with the Braves in the whole organization. He started working with him a couple of years ago, and that helped that aspect a lot. And then he gives the other credit, a lot of credit, to Ben Brewster, the guy with Tread Athletics, who's like a pitching guru, a mechanics guru.
Right.
And it's not often that, you know, a team will kind of consent to somebody from outside the organization helping within a season. You know, guys are kind of free to do what they want in the off season. I mean, team's not going to stop you if you want to seek out somebody, you know what I mean? But he was with the full consent of the Braves working with him starting last summer, you know, to really hone his mechanics and get it like what you've talked about, Eric, the direction and all that. And man, the things for it to all come together, along with obviously the advice that he got or the direction, the edict he got from Ben Sustanovich, the assistant general manager in charge of player development, and Davis, the pitching coordinator, to start throwing the curveball more a couple of years ago. They said, you got a great curveball. You need to start throwing the curveball more and the sinkers instead of, you know, he had gotten away to the sliders, which when analytics really kind of took over everything, the general advice that pitchers were getting was more sliders, more heaters up in the zone. And he kind of bought into that because he was a young, impressionable pitcher. And he thought, okay, maybe I can go to the next level doing that more. So he got away from his curveball. And that was a mistake because his curveball is really good. So when those guys a couple of years ago told him to get back to throwing that, that was kind of the first step in this progress of rebuilding Kyle Wright. That and the mental skills coach, the mental performance coach, Zach Sorensen. And then starting last summer, working with Ben Brewster to really bring those mechanics up to par, consistent. And not only that, but to teach him the cues where within a game, he can sense when his mechanics are off now and fix them batter to batter instead of week to week or month to month where he was before. So he's really, it's kind of those, all those guys together have helped rebuild him. And now he's in a really good place.
Yeah, it's a potion, you know. I mean, there's so many moving parts and so many things that go into a pitcher building confidence. And, you know, obviously the number one thing's results.
Yeah, some guys just don't need that, right, Eric? Some guys are like Max Scherzer and or DeGrom, and they don't need a bunch of guys doing that. But most guys are not like that.
Yeah, if you have DeGrom stuff, you don't really need a mental skills coach.
And Eric, you talked about a guy that was effectively your mental skills coach was Brian McCann, right? I mean, the things he told you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I mean, and that's why it could come from anywhere, you know, and it definitely for Kyle, if he gives somebody credit, I believe it. But there's so many people around you that can affect you. And that's why I preach that clubhouse chemistry and clubhouse vibe and, you know, leadership and all those things, because one comment can just change a career.
That's funny. Right, you were so talking about
Darren O'Day, Charlie Morton kind of thing on this.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. O'Day with the relievers, Charlie with everyone. But it's funny, Eric, you were talking about that, that last, I think you called it 5% of his delivery with Kyle, how you sense a difference now, how he's thrown with conviction. I got the exact same comment from Charlie Morton yesterday. Him and Max were watching him. And that very end, which I don't think a kind of myself or a layman is really going to notice it as much, but you pitchers do. The very end before he delivers the pitch or releases the ball, there's a difference in what he's doing now. And Charlie said the same thing, how he's throwing that curveball with the conviction and all this stuff. The very end before the ball relieves his hand, there's a difference now.
Yeah, you know, it's funny in baseball, too. It's like if you doubt yourself, if you doubt a pitch, it's getting torched every time. Or if you throw a confident fastball right down the middle and your stuff's there, you get a pop-up to center field. But that's why so many people preach conviction, because – It's just such a difference maker, you know, and with Kyle, I mean, there's just no fear right now. And I think that's been the game changer for him.
So it's like that little bit at the very end, though. It's kind of an intensity, huh? It's kind of a nastiness. It's like, here you go, motherfucker. You know, you really, right before you're releasing it.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. You know, when your stuff's off, I mean, you can have that conviction and it might get you through an outing, but when your stuff's off and you don't have any conviction, you have no shot.
Right.
And he has a lot of conviction right now.
And I see that in Scherzer, especially. He's going well 95% of the time. And when he's really locked in the game, he reeks of intensity, man. And that last bit before he delivers a pitch and then his follow through, he's just an animal, man. He's just different than most pitchers out there.
Yeah, and hitters feel that too.
Yeah, and then he comes in the dugout and tells the manager not to touch him. That dude's nuts.
Yep. Yeah, but it works.
It sure does. Thanks, fellas.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matt.
All right. We're going to wrap this up. We really appreciate you guys coming on here with us, and we're gonna keep doing this every week. So you guys tell your friends, have some questions ready, and we'll be glad to answer them. But we really appreciate you guys jumping on board with us. Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm.